Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 28th of July, Anno Domini 2012, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. This is going to be interestingly different. I normally, the only time I ever print out anything in my life anymore is to print out the stuff for here. And as it turns out, I forgot to. So I can read it either off my screen or, I suppose, off of my
little tablet?
My tablet, yeah.
Woohoo! So,
here we go. Apple has rolled out the next major version of its Mac operating system. They did that on Wednesday. The $20 software update brings a handful of iOS features to Macs, including the Notes and Reminders apps. It adds a few other things like Twitter integration, Apple's Game Center, and iMessage services. There's also a new feature, a new security feature called Gatekeeper, designed to fend off malware by controlling what application can and cannot be installed. The software was first announced in February and has undergone several rounds of beta testing from developers. Apple released a golden master version of the software to developers earlier this month, representing the final version that was released in the Mac Store. The release marks a notable shift in Apple's OS X software schedule, which now seemingly follows an annual refresh cycle. Sorry, I've lost my place. See, this is why you don't do this. There it is. Well, where early integrations of OS X were released once a year leading up to 2003's 10.3 Panther, Apple moved to a two-year cycle between 2005 and 2011, putting out three major software updates during that time and focusing much of its engineering efforts on iOS. As with most recent releases of OS X, the minimum system requirements have changed. To see if your Mac will run it, check out the link that Steve is putting online. And our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is as follows. OS X Mountain, your choices, OS X Mountain Lion, your choices are, OMG, I must have it. I'll probably get it. I could not care less. It won't run on my Mac, and it won't run on Windows PC. And so far, we have, yes, 36 votes. Most of you could not care less. And but when you're done with that, you can give us your opinion. Check the yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And the question, of course, is what do you think of OS X Mountain Lion? And, of course, that's our question to you. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
Later, I got an Uncle Dave story hour.
Perfect.
And my laptop is one that's not supported, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Mine is a early 2008 model, and in the MacBook line, the late 2008 model is the oldest one supported. Which is a little annoying because in the iMac and the MacBook Pro, 2007 models are supported. And what we're reading around, there's no official limitation list about why some machines are limited, but it appears to be that Mountain Lion requires a 64-bit graphics card. And some of the older machines don't have 64-bit graphics. They may have a 64-bit processor, but they don't have 64-bit graphics.
Right. Well, I've also seen, and this may be just, I don't know, but I've also seen a lot of people very upset that Apple is turning their operating system into iOS.
Yeah, there's a lot of convergence. And ironically, Microsoft is doing the same thing from the other direction, where the Windows 8 is going to look a lot like their Windows tablet. And so now with Macintosh 10.8 Lion, Mountain Lion, a lot of the features they had on their tablet, they're bringing into the mainstream OS as well. Fortunately, so far, you can turn off a lot of those extra features. But we see a lot of novices like the full screen app mode. Only one app is running at a time, so you don't get confused by overlapping windows. We've been crying for the notification manager in the Mac, the way the iOS has. Right now, when a notification happens, you know, new email or new calendar event, it pops up in the center of the screen and basically stays there until you hit OK, which can be annoying because it's right in the center of the screen. So now you'll have better options about how your notification works from other programs as well. But it is nice that they've been dropping the price. In fact, we're hearing Windows 8 had to drop their price because the Mac OS had dropped. It used to be, as you mentioned in your story, every 2 to 3 years an OS would come out at $139. $129. Now the last OS 10.7 was $30, and this current OS 10.8 is $20. It's really putting the pressure on Microsoft to come down in their prices as well.
Well, which, you're still $20 over my operating system.
True. What's interesting with Apple is that they make money on the hardware and in essence give you the software for free. You know, $20 for this operating system representing a year's work for how many hundreds of thousands of developers? You know, that's not even break even. That's we need a little bit of money to offset the SEC guys. But with Microsoft, pretty much all they sell is software. So all of their revenue comes from their developers writing software. So it's really difficult for them to be able to lower their software price as much. They can lower the Windows operating system because they get a license from every PC. In fact, probably $20 is the license hardware makers pay right now.
Yeah, somewhere between 10 and 20.
Yep. And then they'll probably still sell Microsoft Office to businesses. Although in personal and education, we're seeing more and more people switching to LibreOffice and OpenOffice and the other free Office suites.
Yeah, Microsoft really gets three main revenue streams, it seems. One is the operating system, one is Microsoft Office, and the third is Exchange. A lot of people...
Yeah, per Cal.
Right,
Cal-M.
Right. A lot of people, and some of their other things like SharePoint and like that, but the three big ones seem to be Windows, Office, Exchange. People are moving away from desktops and laptops to tablets, which means Windows is going away.
Yep.
People are moving to LibreOffice, OpenOffice, and things like Google Docs.
Yeah.
So that revenue stream is going away. And there are lots of products like the Google Suite. If you get Google Apps for Business, you essentially get Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
You can share calendars. You can share email. You can share apps.
Yep.
You can collaborate on documents. You can do all of that stuff. So Microsoft is really kind of betting the farm.
Screwed.
What?
Screwed.
Screwed. But they're betting the farm on OS 8.
And I know a lot
OS 8, Windows 8.
I know a lot of nonprofits and some very large educational institutions in town that switched over to Google Mail because hey, it's free.
Mm-hmm.
If you buy Google. Well, for
up
education,
to so
it may still be free.
Yeah.
But for businesses, up to 10 people is free.
Right.
And that's, beyond that, you pay a fee per year. But it's still massive amount cheaper than buying Office for
And if you're a nonprofit, you can, in essence, you can get it for free as well.
Yep.
Exciter's looking to do that, too. Our mail service is a provider. They're raising their prices and switching servers. And, well, let's just switch over to Google Mail. The really annoying thing with Google Mail now is that as a personal user, you only get 10 mailboxes for free. At Jesse Group, we signed up long enough ago. We have 100 free mailboxes,
right?
And we only used like 6 of them,
right?
But at the users group, we need more than 10, so we're going through the nonprofit get us all the mailboxes we need for free,
right?
But even after that, it's ludicrously inexpensive compared to something like Microsoft Exchange.
Yeah, yeah. It's I think it's $50 a year per person.
$4 or $5 per month per person.
Yeah, so $60 a year.
Right.
$50-$60
and
a year.
And Microsoft
Which
Exchange,
compared to Microsoft
it's
Office,
$20,000 for the first five users, right?
Right, for Exchange, right.
Yeah.
Well, that's what Steve and I were just talking about before we started the show was like on repairs. You know, some folks are sitting there looking. Because I had one woman bring in a computer. It was a large Dell laptop, 17-inch screen. And the child had sort of ripped the the hinges off the back part of the screen. So there's screws and everything. I was telling her, well, you know, this has all got to be replaced, the back hinge. Plus, there's a little controller for the screen that was ripped. So I was telling her the price of that it would cost. And she goes, well, let me think it over and call back. No, we're just going to buy another computer for her. I'm thinking, hell with that. I'd make her pay for it.
Well, there's that.
You know, I mean.
But going back to what we were talking about, the ability to now spend a couple of $100 or a few $100 on a small, what would normally be considered an underpowered laptop or a Chromebook, and be able to do everything you actually need to do. If you're a developer, you need all kinds of tools that you're not going to get for that stuff.
Yeah, that's the truck analogy that Jobs used. We're always going to need the trucks, but the rest of us can get a compact car.
That's exactly right. And so I have a Chromebook, which I love. The only reason I'm not using it here is because it does not have a direct wired Ethernet connection. So I can't use it because there's no wireless in here. Although I could leech off Steve, I suppose.
Yeah.
All right. But with my tablet, which I am leeching off Steve at the moment, I can also do everything I need to do.
Well, that's what I was getting to, though, in a roundabout way, is him and I were both discussing it. It's just getting so much cheaper just to replace it. You can get, well, like that little tablet that you have. You can get the 8-gig model for $200.
$200
for an 8-gig unit. It'll surf the web. You can get all kinds of apps, you know, for the individual that, you know, doesn't need a heck of a lot, or even a laptop. You know, laptops are getting so dirt cheap, it's cheaper to say, oh, the heck with it, just go and buy a whole new unit.
Yep.
Which is unfortunate from the consumer waste and recycling efforts that it's becoming cheaper to throw it away and buy a new one.
Yeah,
right. But as long as I'm not going to be writing the great American novel, I can do everything I want to do on this tablet. Because I have access to Google Docs, which works great, oh, by the way, with voice input, by the way.
You could do the American Great Novel, but just do it in parts on Google Docs.
Well, I can write it on Google Docs. It'll take tens of thousands of pages on Google Docs. Yep. It's just writing it on this thing would be a little tedious. Mm. Except, of course, I can always buy an external Bluetooth keyboard.
There you go.
And then do it. So, really, for the price of a low-end laptop, you know, by this and a $50 keyboard, I've now spent $250. Mm-hmm. That's less than a low-end laptop.
Right.
And I personally, except for when I'm doing development work, and I use that caveat in my particular case.
Yes.
Except for that, I can do everything I need to do every day.
We're almost back to the mainframe and dumb terminals. It used to be you had a mainframe in the basement and everyone had a dumb terminal on their desk.
Yep.
But now our mainframe is the cloud.
Yep.
And our dumb terminal is a tablet.
Well, and that's the other thing. I actually have, at work, we have a VDI system, virtual desktop infrastructure. So I actually have the client on here. I can log on to my virtual desktop in the cloud and run Windows on my tablet.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Again, I need a keyboard now.
It's doable without a keyboard, but it's much better.
No, it's way better with a keyboard. but as long as I have that keyboard, $50 Bluetooth keyboard, I can honestly do everything I need to do, including development, because I can develop in the VDI in the cloud on my Windows 7 environment up there if I want to. Or I can create a Linux environment and just log in and do that kind of development, which I actually do all the time. It's only when I have to do certain other types of development that I need to have a Windows
system.
Yeah. So it's similar with the Mac. We've got the Mac OS, Unix underneath. You can easily run virtualization for Windows and other operating systems. I still remember Tony Placilla when I brought up a terminal and, oh my God, it's Unix. It's a bash shell. All right. He started typing
commands. I remember
commands.
You and I pushed you out of the way. Yeah. You were all kind of upset. You wanted to show us all the cool things.
I know. Yeah, I know the LS command. I know a few commands.
You wanted to show us all the cool things that the GUI did.
Yeah. What's the secret, was it Space Invaders command built into Bash?
Oh, I don't remember. I don't remember.
You have to go into Emacs, which I always got a kick out of.
Yeah.
Because it's got the word Mac in it.
I do not remember. I'm sure you can look it up.
There's a hidden game built into BSD Unix at the command line. You know, it's either Space Invaders or Centipede, one of those.
One of my favorites is there's a thing you can load. I don't know if you can load it on here, called BSD Games. And it actually has an acronym decoder. So it's got a dictionary of acronyms.
Mm-hmm.
So you type WTF in the acronym, and it tells you what it is. Now, I don't know if it's loaded in here.
No. Nope.
Yeah,
not
so you don't have it loaded. I think I do on here.
Well, that's what you use Google for now.
Yeah, right. So, yeah. But there's just a bunch of stuff nowadays that you can do without resorting to any mainstream operating system, and that includes OS X as well as Windows 7 or 8 or anything. And that's one of the problems that in particular Microsoft has, because all they really make is software. At least Apple has the iPad and iPod ecosystem to fall back on. We're going to take a break. We've had Victor patiently waiting on the line. We'll take you when we come back. I promise, Victor, I promise. In the meantime, it is 19 minutes after the hour with Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Victor from Irondequoit on the line. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
I hit a problem with Skype, so I installed Yahoo Messenger to see if that would help, and that didn't seem to do it. But unbeknownst to me, I installed the Yahoo toolbar.
Yes, you did.
So I used Revo Uninstaller this morning to try to get rid of it, and about halfway through the uninstall, it hung up, and nothing happened for about 10 minutes, so I didn't know what to do, so I restarted the computer. I came back.
Are you in Firefox?
Yeah.
Okay.
I came back, and Revo Uninstaller shows that the only thing left is Yahoo Software Update. That's it. The toolbar on the Revo Uninstaller is not there, but yet I have it on Firefox. It's still in the menu bar, too. I mean, how do I get rid of it?
Yeah. Tools, add-ons,
yeah.
Extensions.
Yep.
You'll find the extension that enables the Yahoo toolbar.
I see it. You're right. Remove.
There you go.
Oh, that's too easy.
I'm sorry. stand on your left foot only.
Oh, my.
Face north.
Well, thank you very much, guys. I mean, now this morning I was knocking myself out, and you guys saved me.
The Yahoo toolbar tends to sneak in when you download a lot of different things, because Yahoo is paying these download sites to include it. And so it's becoming more and more important to read every little screen
yes.
that pops up, because you missed the screen that said that you agreed to download and install it.
Yeah, that and quite a few other tools tag yep. along with it.
It's gone.
Yep.
There you go.
Beautiful.
There you go.
All right, thank you very much, guys.
Yep. Absolutely our pleasure.
Just remember, set fundraiser time.
That's right. That's exactly how that works. That is exactly how that works. As Steve said, the Yahoo toolbar is one of those things that leeches onto a lot of stuff, and it's understandable. I mean, let's face it, everybody's got to make some form of living somewhere, somehow. Everybody's got to make a living somehow.
I found adventure. You are at the dead end of a dirt road.
Yeah.
The road goes to the east. In the distance, you can see that it will eventually fork. There is a shovel here, and you get a blinking command line.
Yep. Yeah.
Everyone has to remember the olden days,
yes.
you had to imagine things in your mind.
Listen,
you had to type commands.
Adventure has the best graphics ever.
Yeah.
Because they're all in your head. You can't get higher res than that.
I can remember having a sheet of paper. And
when
you worked around different paths, you had to figure out, all right, I went this far to the left, and then I went up, and then I went over. So you had to draw
yep.
if you were down in a maze or that type of stuff, you had to draw it out so you knew where you were.
Different games that worked on the Zork engine.
Oh, yep. Yes.
I remember some of the early Infocom games I got on. The first game I ever bought for my Mac was Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And there was a command. I bought the hint book after 47 steps to get the babblefish. Yeah. I had to break down and buy the hint book.
Yep.
But then the hint book had a bunch of things to do after you've finished the game. And one of them was you go back to Arthur's house after the bulldozers have bulldozed it. And the command is enjoy the rubble.
I don't want to know, do I?
It's like 27 paragraphs on how you can't properly enjoy rubble until it's aged sufficiently, and it's got to have this. Douglas Adams was just the greatest.
He was the greatest. He really was. He really was. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Joe from Buffalo. Hiya, Joe. What do you know?
Well, then, I just wanted to talk a little bit about IMEs, or Input Method Editors. This is something for Android. And actually, I was kind of wondering if Steve could say, do they have similar things for iPads and iPhones?
What do they do, I guess, is
my
question.
Well, you get a standard virtual keyboard on your screen, but you can replace that as an input method. For example, on Android, you can go to Go Development Team and get the Go keyboard. And it provides you a lot more functionality than just the standard Android keyboard. I managed to find another company that's putting out a implementation of Palm Graffiti, which works very nicely for me because I've been using Graffiti on Palms for a while. And there's a Slovakian hacker who has hacked together a quick writing IME.
Right, there's one for Japanese as well. There's one for Korean.
Yeah, all the languages are available in the iPad under international, under keyboards, including an emoji keyboard. So now I can type full emoji icons.
At last,
yeah. But as a programming language edition, I haven't seen one of those. It may exist, I just haven't seen one.
Yeah. I don't know if they're out there, but there are an awful lot of different input. What most people call them is just different keyboards.
Different keyboards, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of them out there. I actually have a story in here. Is that this week? Did I put that in here? I know I was looking at it, but I don't think I actually put it in here. Oh yeah. Rather than read it, I'll just tell you about it. If you go to...
So there's really cool icons in the emoji keyboard.
Yeah, I see that. if you go to the Google search page on any mobile browser. I know it works in Safari on the iPad. I know it obviously works in Chrome on the Android. Under settings, you can turn on handwriting. Then when you go back to the page to search Google, you can actually draw letters right on the whole page.
Oh, my. It's going to be like an Apple Newton then.
Yes. And it will actually, assuming your handwriting is slightly better than mine, although you can also do block letters. It says it takes cursive. It sure doesn't take my cursive.
Holy
moly, does it not take my cursive. Then again, I can't read my cursive. Really, my hand should have been a doctor. The rest of me, not so much, but I certainly have the ability to write.
Wasn't it a couple of weeks ago when I was gone, you were talking about schools not even teaching cursive anymore?
Yeah, they don't. But if you want, excuse me, you can block write as well.
Where do you turn that
on?
And
it actually shows it up. If you
search
go into
settings,
down at the bottom, one of the choices is handwriting.
And, of course, it's probably doing this by the user agent header, so it knows to present this sort of thing to you.
Right. You can't do it from a non-mobile browser. That is to say, I don't believe it's available from your laptop or desktop computer. But from iOS, it is. Now, what you have to do, there it is. There you go.
I can write anywhere on the screen.
Anywhere on the screen. So go ahead and write something.
No, I didn't get it.
Well,
my handwriting is about as bad as yours.
You're clearly right. You clearly chose the, instead of the Palmer method, you chose the Francesco method. But yeah,
I've got a stylus in my iPod. That might help.
That might help. The reality here appears to be that you have lots of choices on the Android side. I don't know how many alternate keyboards are actually available for iOS, although I can't imagine that there wouldn't be 1,000 of them.
I keep finding physical keyboards rather than soft input keyboard methods.
And the thing about it is, on Android, they install
swipe,
like any other application. You download a .apk and say, install this, and ooh, it's all automatically part of your system now.
Right. And then you can choose it. There's actually a selection in settings for input. And you pick the keyboard you want.
You first go into the language settings, and you say, enable this IME. And it'll pop up a screen warning you, hey, warning, it's not from us. This could be a keystroke logger sending it back to Hacker Central and all that. But, you know, you dismiss that. You say, okay.
Yeah, if you loaded it on purpose and it's a trusted source, then go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you long press on any input, and one of the choices should be input method, and it'll give you a choice among all the input methods you have installed.
Yep.
I think it's a pretty neat facility, which I never would have thought of. It's
that's the same thing happens on the iPad, and if you tap and hold on some of the modifier keys, especially keys with accents, you'll see additional keys you can type.
Yeah, but he's talking about a whole new keyboard.
Right, a whole new keyboard. It's got foreign languages built in, and I'm Googling around to see if there's different types of keyboards other than just a foreign language.
I'll say for the Go keyboard for Android is the standard keyboard, you basically have to type an alternate shift to get to symbols. Almost every single key on the Go keyboard has a symbol on it, like on A, there'll be at. So if you long press on A, you get an at, that sort of thing.
What I've loaded on all of my Android devices is swipe it.
Oh, swipe. That is an excellent IME.
Well, actually, I think I'm using slide it, actually.
It won't install on my particular Android tablet. I don't remember why, but I saw somebody use it on their phone, and I just went, wow, is that ever fast for inputting text?
Oh, it's ridiculously fast. I absolutely love it. The one I'm using is actually Slide It, which is free in the App Store. Excuse me, in the Google Play Store. I beg your pardon.
I'll go to the App Store and search for keyboard and see what shows up.
Slide It is free, and for those of you who don't know, what it does is instead of having to peck at each letter, you slide over them with your finger. So if you wanted to say hello, you press on the H and then slide your finger over the E, slide it to the L, slide it to the O, and it picks that up and says, oh, it's hello.
Cool.
And it's, you're right, Joe, it's ridiculously fast.
One of the things,
I can type almost as fast as my daughter now on my phone.
One of the things that we've been reading about coming in iOS 6 is more predictive typing.
Yeah.
So that
T9 sort of thing?
Not really. You type, you know, H-E-L, and it pops up and says hello.
Right.
Which the iPad does that now already. It can predict what you're trying to type in English. It's not T9. You're typing the full English word. But the predictive keyboard will give you several different options. Yeah. You know, so instead of just, you know, hello, you'll get other variations of H-E-L.
Right. The one thing that this particular slided keyboard doesn't do terrifically well is 2 and 2, T-O versus T-O-O. It brings up T-O, T-O-O, and a couple of others, and so you have to pick T-O-O. I get that. That's fine. But yeah, I really like Slide It. It just makes me very fast on both my phone and on my Google tablet.
Well, how would you enter double letters in that, like you were mentioning, O-O?
One of them, and I don't know which one it is, because I just don't, it doesn't bother me. Well, generally, when you enter a word, it figures out the word you want. So if you want to say hello, you just slide over H-E-L and O, and it figures out you want hello.
Oh, predictive text based on a dictionary, basically.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
So
and a lot of the Android IMEs do have that, so they'll have a specific strip on them that'll have suggested words, and you can just tap on it instead of spelling it all
right,
out.
Right, and it puts the most common one in there already, so if that's right, you just move on to the next one.
You can select it and go ahead.
And you can turn it off. The really nice thing I like about Slide It is you can turn it off for when, for example, you're typing passwords, which shouldn't be words.
Yeah, that feature I kind of turned off. There's actually a security feature that says, oh, show me the letters I'm typing as I'm typing in a password field. I mean, initially that's good to make sure you're not making a mistake.
Right.
It's really, really insecure. It's bad enough that they put something like asterisks or dots in the blank so you can see how many characters
right. It's
being typed. But I just thought, boy, this is ridiculous if somebody happens to be seeing my tablet screen. That's really bad.
Yep. I'll tell you
this much. I'm really jealous of the people in Kansas City right now because Google made their announcement this week about Google Fiber deployment.
Yep.
The fact that a gigabit symmetrical is only going to be $70 a month.
$70 a month for a gigabit Ethernet connection.
And 5 megabit was free.
5 meg was free.
Yeah.
Free.
For 7 years.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they'll if you're willing to sign a either 1 or 2 year contract,
right.
They'll waive your $300 installation fee too.
It's just who would not sign a 2 year contract for $70 a year to get a gigabit? Symmetrical.
Me, because I'm not don't have a job right now.
Well, right, but I mean, in general, the people who can afford to switch ISPs and blah blah blah.
A lot of us are paying that much now for the 10 megabit we get.
Yeah, if you get 10.
Yeah.
Oh, that is one of the things. I happened to watch the hour long presentation that they threw up on YouTube, and one of the things that they showed was the speed improvement of computing versus the speed improvement of communication. And it is virtually flatlined, not quite, but it's virtually flatlined since they were charting this.
Yep.
And also, they showed the cost of it. It's like, okay, we came in ahead of like one European country. That's about it. And everybody, like Japan, was a cent per megabit per second. It's like, good gravy. Why are we paying so much for our internet access?
Well, and why are we capped? No other country caps. It's simple.
Australia does.
Australia does, but no other country, and particularly when you're talking about mobile data, Korea's like ridiculously higher than we are. Korea! And it's just sad. All right, listen, I'm sorry, Joe, we got to go. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Tim from Webster on the line. Welcome, Tim. What's your question?
Yes, hi, guys. My question is not nearly as interesting as that last conversation you had, so I'm wondering if I should just hang up right now. But
never.
I have an Acer that's about 2 years old, and this has been a pet peeve of mine. The cursor drives me nuts on this thing. I have an older Dell that's almost 10 years old, and not the mouse pad. That's not what you call it. The thing you put your finger on the laptop.
Slide pad,
or trackpad, or.
Well, are you talking about the little eraser between the G and the H?
No. The part that you put your finger on to actually move the cursor around
down
the
at the bottom under the shift under the space bar.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the glide pad or trackpad or
touchpad.
Depends on whose trademark you want to use.
Right. No. Okay, so is it that thing or the actual cursor on the screen? The shape of the cursor?
No, I think it's that physical thing, actually.
Okay.
I can't, and about 25% of the time, it's like I don't have control of that. I'll go to use it, and the cursor will bounce across to the other side of the screen, and it's just I'm paying attention to where if my finger is touching another part of this pad, and it's making it jump, or I know it's kind of a silly question.
Often what happens is you lean your palms on the keyboard around it, but there's no support underneath there for that. And so it flexes the pad, and the pad interprets that as input and jumps the mouse to that place.
Because a lot of times the optical drive is under one of the wrist pads, and the hard drive is under one of the other ones, and so it just flexes just enough.
So if you were to actually press on what everybody thinks of as the wrist rest or palm rest, it isn't. It's just more area. But if you were to actually press on that hard enough, you might see the cursor jump.
The easiest thing to do is just go out and pick up a USB mouse.
And not use the internal trackpad.
Yeah, not use that stupid.
The other thing we see a lot is if people do use that wrist rest while they're typing, the heel of your hand can often touch the corner of that trackpad.
Right, and it will jump.
Which
the mouse.
Then it thinks you touched it and wanted to move the mouse.
You're saying that just my weight on another part of the computer.
Yes.
Really?
Yep. Yes, absolutely, yes.
Oh, yeah, over time?
Like I said,
you're flexing the electrical connection, and it's interpreting that as
input.
Movement. Yep. Input, yeah.
So if you were to...
it's an alternate input method.
It's an alternate input method. If you were to press really hard on one side, then the other, then the one, then the other, you might actually see the cursor jump a little.
Of course, that's kind of bad to do because you're wearing out those wires. It's like you bend a wire back and forth enough times, it breaks.
You got to realize they're cramming a lot of space, a lot of stuff into a small space, wiring and everything else. It's just like we've told folks with the wiring that goes up through the hinges on the monitor or your display, opening and closing that can wear that down and cause it to short out.
And the reality is that, As Dave said, since everything is crammed in there, they haven't really designed the motherboard to leave holes to put support posts in.
Yeah, none.
So there's nothing under there that's protecting you. So particularly when you're typing, you can put an awful lot of pressure on those areas which are not wrist rests.
And you don't realize it.
So if you were a pianist, you've learned to raise your hands above the keys.
And that's how my typing teacher taught me so many years ago. You shouldn't rest your wrists on the wrist rest.
Right.
Say that five times.
Yeah, right.
We're getting into tongue twisters today.
Right, but that's the problem right there, Tim. It happens to an awful lot of people.
That was my next question, is how common is this?
And very.
So you're telling me, aside from going the USB route, I just have to maybe teach myself how not to put any weight anywhere else?
Either that,
you have to teach yourself to type properly. I'm sorry, you're not supposed to rest your... It's very bad for your hands. This is one of the things that causes carpal tunnel. Is resting your wrists on the wrist rest. Because you're bending your hands at a bad angle while you're typing, and that's one of the things that causes carpal tunnel. If you keep your hands above the keys, your wrists are straight.
Right, but we're talking about manipulating the cursor and the cursor bouncing around.
Yeah. But that's because you've got your weight to either side of that trackpad. And it's flexing the trackpad and causing the mouse to move.
So anyone who doesn't have this problem has just learned how to not put, how to only keep their finger on that.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. It also depends on the design of the laptops. Each laptop is different in the way they run their wires. It sounds like your particular unit. It's an issue in that, the constant pressure over years has caused this.
The other thing is when you keep your wrists on the wrist rest, your thumbs are awfully close to that pad.
Right.
And just the option of typing, you can tap that thing.
I suppose theoretically it could be that the trackpad is broken and there's a malfunction in it.
Yeah, but
you may also want to turn down your cursor sensitivity.
Right.
So that it doesn't move so fast when you slide your finger on it.
That's kind of where I was wondering if there's an option for that. Where would I find that?
Under the control panel.
control panel. Okay.
There's one for mouse, and one of the choices is sensitivity. But
there may be a different one for trackpad, too. There may be one for a mouse and one for a trackpad.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. So one of the things that you really need to do, however, is be very aware of that, because you are causing stress to that trackpad, and it could, as both Steve and Dave said, it could break.
Sure. Is it necessarily a problem that more Acers might be prone to just because of the design or not? Maybe
It's hard to say.
Okay. And let's face
model
it,
Acer... Model to model is different, even within your company.
Right. Acer and Asus make a lot of computers for other people as well.
Okay.
And in general, like I said, they're cramming an awful lot of stuff in there and not leaving room for posts.
Okay. Can I ask one other quick question?
Quick. Go ahead.
Okay. A family member has an older Dell, and whenever he shuts the top down, the fan never stops running. It just goes and goes for hours. Could that cause an overheating problem?
Well, that's already an overheating problem. That's why the fan is running.
Right.
Might need to be blown out.
Well, it sounds like the computer's not going to sleep. Typically, when you close the laptop lid, it goes to sleep. But it sounds like it may not be going to sleep, and then the heat is building up inside because it can't escape through the keyboard anymore, and so it runs the fans hotter to make it. We actually had a machine do that, and it melted all the plastic keys off.
Yeah.
And he pulled it out of his backpack, and the keyboard was, in essence, gone. And the weird thing is we didn't find any melted plastic at the bottom of his backpack.
Wow.
We don't know where it went to.
Oops.
But one of the things that you should do with that is, again, in the control panel under power, check to see that it is, in fact, shutting off when you close the lid.
Okay.
Because you have choices of hibernate or suspend.
Right.
Or shut off.
Right.
And hibernate takes all of your data and puts it on the hard drive and essentially shuts the machine down.
Right.
Suspend leaves everything in RAM and actually keeps it running. And obviously shutdown means shutdown, and you may also have the choice of do nothing, which is, it sounds like, where you are.
Yeah, mm-hmm. If I'm at his house, I manually will go under the start button and will hibernate it myself, so I don't have to.
Right.
So he doesn't have to contend with
but
that.
But check under power and see if in fact it's been changed somehow.
Okay, I'm all set. Thanks for your time, guys.
Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
We see that a lot. And the other part of the problem, of course, is most of those things don't work if you have a desktop, obviously. They're not designed for desktops. They're designed for laptops.
And a lot
desktops
of
desktops are either on or off. You don't hibernate them. You don't suspend them. You just either turn them off or they're on.
And a lot of the early laptops didn't do that well either.
And a lot of the later laptops don't do that well either. So it's not something that you really can count on, but it certainly doesn't hurt to try it. Different models do it different ways or don't do it at all. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Welcome, James. What's your question?
Hello. Yes, I have Windows 7. How would I add the email and Internet Explorer to open up when it starts up? I used to have it, and I lost it.
So that when you first turn on your computer,
yeah,
your email...
Yeah, it automatically opens the email and the Explorer.
Right. What you have in the Start button is something called the Startup Folder.
Uh-huh.
And you can move the icons from that you want into that folder.
So how would you do that?
You got to go. Oh,
you right drag on it. So you find the icon on your computer,
mm-hmm.
and then right drag it toward the Start menu.
Mm-hmm.
And on Windows 7, I'm pretty sure it will ask you if you want it to auto
start.
Let me Google it.
Yeah, it's
now.
Been a while.
You have to find that startup items folder.
I see it. It says startup. Open that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Put anything you want to launch at startup, put in that folder.
So
now drag a copy of Internet Explorer.
Or your email.
Well, right drag it and make an alias in that startup folder.
Yeah. You've got Internet Explorer on your desktop, right?
Yeah.
Right click and hold down the right button.
Okay.
Not the left button, not the one you normally use, but the other one. Drag it over to that folder.
After I open the folder, right?
After you open the folder, then let go.
And it should put a copy in there.
And it'll ask you if you want to make a copy.
It says copy here, move here, create shortcut.
Copy here. Or create, no, sorry. Create shortcut is the one you want.
Create shortcut here. Okay, just do that.
Yep.
Okay, and all right, I see it. It's in there.
Yep, and now you do the same thing with your email.
Yep.
And now, when you restart the machine, everything that's in the startup folder will open up automatically.
Yeah, it's just the two things.
That's all you need.
There you go.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely, our pleasure.
It doesn't slow it down, does it? No.
Well, yes. Well, yeah. It will take it longer to boot up because now it has to open those two programs.
And it's also going to have to check for mail.
But if that's what you want it to do every time, that's...
I open them anyway. Okay, that's good.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
There you go.
Most people don't want anything launching at startup because it takes so long.
Yeah, that's why I'm trying to hit in a brain fart there for a second because...
Yep. Yeah,
taking things out of startup.
But if the first thing you do is always open up your email and always open up your browser, might as well have them open automatically. It takes the same amount of time, only it saves you a couple of clicks.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it's going to take longer than just booting up because you're also booting a couple of programs. But once it's done, you're at the place you would have wanted to be anyway, and it didn't actually take you any longer and saved you a couple of clicks. So, not a big deal. Not a big deal.
In my case, my machine's on 24/7. The only thing I turn on is the monitor.
That's the other thing. Yeah, most people just leave their machines turned on, so it never has to boot.
Yeah,
right. Well, if it's a laptop.
Oh yeah, a laptop. Yes, definitely.
Sure. And if the thing you always want to do is that, then it works. Yeah, it does work. It absolutely works out. Works out. And so. It is not something everybody wants to do, right? I mean, some people, but most people go into their mail and go into their browser. So those would be the two most common things that you would start up every time.
One thing, I'll go to a different topic if we can for a moment, because we were kind of talking about it before, you know, about Windows 8. All right, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. All right, you work for a major institute.
I do.
How likely is it that you're going to quick jump to Windows 8?
We are not quickly jumping to anything, and certainly not to Windows 8.
And why so?
Because we have a lot of testing to do before we'll be able to say this is something that is usable by our people.
Have you gone to Windows 7 yet?
Yes, we have.
How long did that take?
Quite a while. we've got a lot of hardware, a lot of older hardware running in our back room, and older software running in our back room to do things like student management and things like that are run for the Institute in general. And many of them don't run on newer web browsers yet, much less anything else. So we've been very cautious in moving ourselves forward.
And how likely do you think it's going to be that most of your faculty who have been using, say, Windows since, say, even Windows 3.1, that are so used to the start bar and everything else, clicking and doing things there, to all of a sudden have a tablet mode shoved at them?
Our faculty do not take well to change, some of them. We're trying to get them to stop printing out every paper students send them and edit them on the screen, and they're not at all into that even. So a brand new operating system is going to be a hard sell.
And that's
at some point we'll have to go, because if we buy them new computers, they will come with Windows 8, and you won't be able to buy Windows 7 anymore.
No, I would sit there and the only thing I would sit there and say is, because of the way things are going, is that Windows will turn around and see how bad Windows 8 is doing because of, again, not having the startup bar and everything else there for folks to use, that it's going to meet a lot of opposition.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree at all. But in the long run, Windows, I think, doesn't care about our opposition.
No, they clearly don't. But I think, like Vista, I think it's going to meet a lot of... and given this,
a lot of pain for guys like us.
Yeah, and
on the other hand, we
training the training you're going to have to do to folks.
Oh, yeah.
People can't do it in today's economy. Hell, they're trying to worry about just keeping jobs and people working.
That's right. All right, listen, people, we're going to take a break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole nother hour of this nonsense. For no discernible reason, you continue to listen to the longest running computer show in the known universe. With Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco, and we're going to be back very shortly, so pay attention to what goes on in the interim, and we'll be back with more of us on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WG
Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we have Jason from Altoona, PA, on the line. Hiya, Jason. What's up?
Nothing much. Hey, Nick, are you familiar with the PC-1000 tablet computers?
I am not.
Back in 2003, Compaq released an XP-based tablet computer. It was a fully functional PC system, running Windows XP, not embedded or any stripped-down version, but it had built-in touch support. And what got me thinking about that was the fact that I actually had one for several years, loved it, and when it became too weak to run programs natively, I set it up for remote desktop control to control my main computer in my house. But you had just mentioned about having some of the people at your at the place where you work correct students' papers on the computer directly.
Yep.
And what I was thinking is that same setup running, I know it's running Windows XP and not 7, but some of the newer versions, I believe the TC-1000 was running the TC-1100 just before they killed the form factor. Some people have gotten that to run Windows 7 fairly decently, but that has a stylus built in, and because it's running Windows natively, it would be, you know, they'd be able to go in and edit it in Word. They'd be able to make edits as though they were had a piece of paper in front of them with a pencil.
Yep, that's exactly right. That is exactly right. We bought many years ago. We bought our folks tablet PCs, but many of them did not take to them. But some did, and loved it. But yes, the same basic idea. You get a tablet PC was one where you could swing the screen around and lay it down flat so it looked like a tablet, but if you opened it up, it had a keyboard.
Well, the one I'm referring to from HP and Compaq, the keyboard was actually detachable.
Right. I do know which one you're talking about. And yeah, it was a great computer, and you could do things like that if you could run Windows 7 on it. Or Adobe Reader has a mode where you can edit I think you have to pay for it. It's Adobe Reader Pro. Has a mode where you can actually edit right on the document if you have a stylus sort of thing. So you could do it. For example, I do it on my tablet. I've done it on the iPad. And there are lots of additional programs that will do that on the tablets, not the tablet computers, but the actual tablets like the iPad or the Nexus 7. We've given all our faculty iPads and tried to teach them how to do stuff like that, so you never have to print out anything if you don't want to.
Okay. Well, like I said, it was because it was a PC-based system, I thought it would be a little more comfortable for them to interface with because it's something they'd already be familiar with.
Yep. No, I see what you're saying.
And something for you personal, if you want to jump on eBay, they do still have them available. I have found that somebody has begun the porting for Ice Cream Sandwich to the TC 1100 form factor.
Wouldn't that be fun? Wow, thanks.
Have a good day.
Thanks, Jason. Pretty cool. Gotta say it. Pretty cool. That makes a lot of sense to me, actually. That would be kind of fun. I've had good luck using both the iPad and the Nexus 7 to do editing of documents in the sense that markup, right, where you can say, you can circle something and say expand or cross out words or, you know, do that kind of editing in the sense of being an editor and removing words or adding commas or that sort of fare. I prefer it because now I don't have to print anything. Like I've said many times, the only time I generally print anything is when I'm doing it for here on Saturdays, because yeah, it's actually a little easier to do it.
Read it. Bigger print.
Well, but also, it's a radio kind of thing. You read a piece of paper, you toss it off, you go on to the next thing. It's it's a habit of 23 years, right? So,
I had a teacher once was handing back a paper, and there weren't any red marks on it. So she stopped for a second, looked at it, took off half a point because I had a period too far from the end of the sentence.
Yeah.
Because she couldn't hand back a paper with no marks on it.
Yep. I understand that. I understand that. So, yeah, it's rip and read, exactly. The guy, Archandra, Joe and was saying that over on the IRC chat. You know, we're on an IRC chat every week at Octothorpe Soundbites or Pound Soundbites or Hash Soundbites, whatever you want to call it. We're on Ustream. I don't know how they find us there.
Soundbites Radio.
All one word?
I think so.
All right.
To all one word or with hyphens?
And, of course, we're...
With hyphens.
With hyphens. Sound-bites-radio or soundbites-radio?
Yep. Sound-bites-radio.
Okay. Obviously, we're streaming live.
And you have a link on our Soundbites front page.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're streaming live on jazz901.org. And oddly, we're on the radio as well.
Thing I want to talk about more about is your tablet.
I love my tablet. I have a Nexus 7. Let me tell you about my Nexus 7.
Because we're kind of going over right now, just so folks know, the 16 gig are back ordered.
Yeah, they're sold out of 16 gigs.
They won't even tell you when those are going to be available. But then you and I were sort of kind of hashing over, and this is what I want to kind of talk with the group, because you're almost getting me again to come from the dark side to go to, because I had a 10-inch tablet.
Yeah.
And playing and looking more and more at your 7-inch tablet and the clarity and rethinking, you know, because you caused me to rethink on this in that I'm thinking 8 gig. All right. What would I put on it? How much am I really going to do this and this? And I'm thinking, whoa. And seeing what you've already got loaded, I'm thinking,
I've barely used a gig.
Yeah, you've got a number of books in that.
Video is the biggest thing. So we run into the same issue selling iPads. If you think you're going to store a lot of video, you need the bigger storage.
Right.
If you're just going to stream video, that
you
doesn't
don't need
count.
Any storage. And that's what Google. That's why Google was surprised that the 16 gigs sold out, because they assumed people would leave everything in the cloud. And if you do that, then that's all you need. I mean, how many videos do you really need? Maybe a couple videos of your kids, maybe a bunch of pictures of your kids, but it's still that's a lot of stuff to try to fill up 8 gig with. But but here's the interesting thing to me: the speaker on this blew. So I called up Google.
Yep.
And I said I'd like to do an exchange. I'd like to send this in for repair. And they said, "What's the problem?" I said, "The speaker blew." He said, "Okay." No argument, no, did you overdrive it, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Okay, let me get your information, blah, blah, blah. Okay, let me look you up. Oh, it's a 16-gig tablet. We're happy to do this, and here's the way we'll do it. We will send you a brand new one. When you get it, send back the old one. If you don't send back the old one in 3 weeks, we charge you for the new one.
How can you go wrong on that?
You can't go wrong.
That's the way Gateway used to do things. You know, they'd send you a replacement.
Yeah, they call it advanced replacement. They take your credit card as collateral. So if you don't send it back, they'll charge you.
Yep.
Usually more than the thing was worth to begin with. But
now, more interesting, he said, "Look, here's the deal, though. It's a 16 gig tablet, and we're way short on those. And we cannot promise you you'll get it in less than 3 weeks." My response, of course, was, "I don't care. I still got the old one.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm without one for 3 weeks."
Right, and so the speaker is not as coherent as you'd like it.
Right, it sounds like a drunken Dalek is the way I've been putting it.
And you can put headphones on it anyway, right?
Exactly, and on headphones, the clarity is unbelievable, particularly with a decent pair of headphones. So that was Thursday. Yesterday, I got a message from Google saying it had been shipped. And it's on a truck out of Buffalo this morning.
Slackers.
So, yeah. I can't argue with these people.
So I'm wondering.
Speaking of drunken Daleks.
Yeah, very nice. Nice. Have you seen the the pictures of the security in London. It's a line of Daleks.
A line of Daleks.
So that's very cool, and they're replacing it. I should have it today. And Joe, it is in fact a known issue. One of the things, and it's understandable. They're using inexpensive parts to make this thing $200.
Yeah,
and some of the speakers are not good. Oh, I get it. The point is, they're fixing them for free.
Yep, so they're not giving you any hassle or anything. You ordered it on Thursday, and they're already it's on a truck coming to Buffalo.
So I can't argue with that.
I've got another picture here. It's the Large Hadron Collider.
Right.
It's not finding large hadrons. It's large. So the thing is the size of a building, and those little tiny things down at the bottom, they're people.
Yeah, exactly.
Little tiny things down at the bottom.
But yeah, the thing is that the 16 gig has sold out, and only the 8 gig tablets are available. I did get a 16 gig because I really thought I was going to add things to it, but except for perhaps when I'm on a train and I want to watch a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to load anything onto this thing. I'm going to do it all over Wi-Fi.
Well, that's why, like I said, you caused me to start thinking, because I was debating, oh, do I want a 16 gig? You know, that'd be better, and it's only $50 more, you know. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. And I step back and thinking, well, you know, I'm not going to put a ton of pictures in there. I'll put less than a gig of pictures. I've already got one picture frame up there that I just want a few, you know, that I like to have handy.
Right.
But for the most part, it'd be just for my surfing, doing the Google Docs,
yep,
being able to get, you know, the stuff that we have stored over on our Google Drive there, and the apps and that type of stuff.
Right.
And be able to get my Gmail.
Right.
I mean, if I have that, I'm good. So, you know, in a book. You know, I only read a book at a time.
Right.
So, you know, 8 gig, there's no way.
Well, and that's
I'm running
thing.
Out of my Hunter Harrington. I'm on book 11 of 12.
Of 12,
and
yeah.
13 hasn't come out yet.
Yes.
So what's going to now I got to if I'm going to go and read all the ancillary novels.
Right.
I don't know yet.
Well, I was in the store, and matter of fact, I got to look it up because I'm hoping that they have it up. I'm most sure. Grissom's The Last Juror. I started reading that while I was in the store waiting for a friend. Started reading that.
Yeah.
I got to get that tablet and see if I can download this because it'd be great just to have that. I enjoy when I have my tablet at night reading a book on the tablet. It was just nice. It kept my page, you know, the mark on my page.
And on this thing, I love my Nook, but the Nook app on this is clearer.
Well, it's got the Gorilla Glass.
Yeah, and it's 216 pixels per inch. It's essentially, given the disparate sizes, it's essentially retina display. It's the same density.
At that size and that viewing angle,
Yeah. I cannot say enough about it. It looks like it's painted on. Everything looks like it's painted on.
Well, and then I was watching, this is the other thing, you're a bad influence.
I am, I admit it.
And I'll admit it too. But then I started watching the video, and the video of it, and they're talking about how, you know, broke it down and crammed a lot in there. Yep. And they're showing one of the games going across there. And it's like, holy macro, the clarity on that.
It's a Tegra processor with 12 cores. And there are about a half a dozen games. I'm not a game player, but I downloaded every one of the Tegra games just to see how beautiful, how absolutely beautiful they look on this screen.
And then the other kicker is the $25 incentive right now
in the Play Store. You get $25 in the Play Store to spend however you want to spend it on whatever you're going to spend it on. I haven't even figured out what I'm going to spend it on yet. I'll buy some books, maybe some music, whatever. But you know, I've got however many days of music I've got in the Google Play Music Store, and so I don't really need. I don't really need a whole lot of stuff. I've been buying old albums. I've been buying. My favorite part of the music store on Google is that they have a free song a day. And on the 4th of July, it was American Pie, Don McLean's American Pie.
Woohoo!
So I've only been playing that about 100,000 times a day. All right. Our next caller is Carl from Pottstown, PA. How are you, Carl?
Good. How are you?
Peachy.
Good. I have a question about email. I have a friend who has Yahoo email. That's what he normally uses. But whenever he goes to a website to click on an email link to send them an email, as soon as he clicks on the link, Outlook Express pops up. But he doesn't want Outlook Express to pop up. He wants his Yahoo email software to pop up. How does he make that happen?
The main problem is that Yahoo is not an email program. It's a website. So that screws up the helper apps that are trying to launch an application to do your email. There is a Yahoo Helper app, because I've seen the same one for Gmail. I just have to find it here, which is actually a little app on your computer that will install, and it changes the Mail-To reference to launch this Yahoo Helper app, which then opens the Yahoo website.
And guess what? How do you get it?
Go to Google.
You install the Yahoo toolbar.
Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah.
So that's one way to do it. Let's see. Well, I'm on a Mac, so there's a Apple script that it will do.
So it's called the Yahoo Mail plugin, and I suppose you can remove the toolbar after you've installed the plugin.
What browser are they using?
Let's see. I think he's using XP on one machine. On another machine.
No, the browser.
What browser? Firefox, Chrome, Safari, Explorer.
Mm-hmm. Each
browser has different instructions.
He doesn't like to use Internet Explorer. He uses Firefox.
All right, in Firefox, you go to the Tools menu, then Options, then Applications, and there's a Mail-To command, and that's what the Internet uses to open mail programs.
Mm-hmm.
And there's I'll just post this link, too. There's a section there that should say Yahoo Mail, so it will change your Mail-To helper link to use Yahoo Mail.
Okay, I'll see if that works for him.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. We are going to take another break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you continue to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. You know you can give us a call. You know it's 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hey!
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
Hi, this is Sid O'Connor. Join me Sunday mornings from 7 until noon right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Now we're back.
Welcome back. Are we? Are we on? No.
The board's live.
All right, now we are.
Are we back on? Okay, we're going to pretend we're back on. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at, 25 minutes after the hour, maybe we're on the air, and maybe now we have Al on the line from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Al. What's your question?
It sounds like you're having a lot of fun there.
Yeah, the big scary red light was on there for a minute.
I've had fun. This isn't it.
Yeah, I'm sitting there.
I don't know what happened.
I don't know either.
You're still there?
Yeah, I'm still
theoretically,
there.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's up, Al?
Hey, just some trivia. You guys have been talking about toys most of the morning, and I have to say that you're killing me because the temptation is getting so great to just rush out and buy something.
Yeah, exactly. We're evil. We are at least enablers.
That you are. Hey, but just a couple side notes, not really computer related, but just on topics you've sort of touched as you have gone past them. Wall Street Journal did a nice analysis of the costs of building the Nexus and the iPad and the Kindle and all that. And the interesting thing was that the Nexus is about a $75 profit margin for what they sell it for. The iPad's about $200 profit, profit for Apple. But
And that doesn't include development and engineering costs. That's just manufacturing
costs.
We're
not saying bad things about Apple. We're just stating boldly what they cost.
Yeah, it's just trivial when you're selling millions of them.
Right.
But the real cool thing was that the difference between a 16 gig and an 8 gig Nexus 7 was $8.
Right, yeah, that's been a big complaint in the Apple world for a while, too. The 16 to 32 is a $100 price increase, and in the Nexus world, the 8 to 16 is a $50 price increase.
For what's essentially $7.50 worth of
memory chips. But they'd have to be marketed like that. If the 16 gig was $10 more, no one would ever buy the 8 gig. Right. So there's marketing decisions in there, too.
Yeah, but then you minimize your inventory issues.
Yep.
So,
true.
Anyways, but for all that, Steve, I think you mentioned John Weber for an author you were reading, Honor Harrington.
Honor Harrington. David Weber.
David Weber, sorry.
Yep.
Hey, I don't know if you're aware, and maybe you are, but your audience may not, but there's a website called Bain, B-A-E-N .com.
The Bain Free Book Library. Yeah.
How great is that?
Yeah, free books, full novels, full series. And I'd also recommend to you the March Up Country, March to the Sea series.
Great stuff with, what's his name? Him and Adele Mundy. Right? Is that the same series?
No, Weber and Ringo tend to pair up a lot.
Yeah.
So, anyways, but I just thought I'd mention this for all your audience that there is a great source of free current science fiction available. Just download it for Kindle and any other format you want.
Yeah, who's in that one? What are the characters?
Oh, the character's name? Sergeant Adib Julian.
Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah. Oh, I love that series. Yeah. It's a good series. You're absolutely right, Al. The Bain Free Library, what they've done is Bain has said to...
Bain is a publisher.
The publisher, and they've said to a bunch of their authors, look, you've made your money off of this book or this series. You've made a lot of money off of this book and this series. How about giving back to the community? Now it's a 20-year-old series. Make it free. The story's no less interesting. The books are no less enticing. It's just that they're 20 years old, so make them free.
And
a lot of – an amazing number of people responded to that.
And what it ends up being is publicity for the author. Neil Gaiman who's a current big sci-fi author. He was really against e-books for the longest time because he was afraid of people's
piracy.
Piracy, stealing his information. And then his publisher convinced him to put an old book out as an e-book. I think it was even for free. And his book sales doubled or even tripled because people found him and started buying his books. It's like lending a physical book to someone. The author lost money because that other someone didn't buy that specific book. But he may end up making more money because you turned someone else on to him and now he's going to buy more.
Yep.
And that free library is really, really cool. And then archive.org has a lot of classic literature for free as well. And in fact, if you go into the iBook store and the Kindle store, they have a lot of stuff from the Gutenberg Project, which is all free e-books from classic literature that have fallen out of copyright. So you can get, I got The Time Machine and Jules Verne, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea,
a lot of
the old stuff,
free.
Yeah.
And the doctor on the IRC chat has asked about free sites for audiobooks. There's a bunch of places. LibriVox is the best known, I think, LibriVox, but there's a bunch. Just type in free audiobooks.
Archive.org has a lot of those as well.
Yeah.
TV shows and radio serials from the 30s and 40s.
Yeah, those are the best. But you can find those at archive.org and bookshouldbefree.com and, like I said, LibriVox and a couple of others. So... Yeah, but yeah, you're absolutely right. I have raided the Bain Free Library. Bain Free Library. In fact, I keep going back and saying, "Come on, where's the next stuff?"
And they're adding new stuff even now too.
Thanks, Al.
Well.
Okay, take care, Dave. Thanks.
Thanks, Al. Yeah. The Bain Free Library at
bain.com/library. Yeah.
One other thing, we had one other person text us with a question, or actually, he says, really annoying for the Nexus 7, captive audience due to no micro SD slot. $50 for 8 gig is ridiculously expensive compared to an SD card.
Yeah, completely agree. One of the ways that they kept the price under, their target was $200. One of the ways they kept the price for the 8 gig version at $199 was to... leave out things like a micro SD slot.
And they were trying. Well, they also added a gig of memory and the processor. I mean, you're shoving right. again. Folks don't realize you're shoving a lot of space. You know, a lot of stuff into a small space.
Right.
And now to add an SD card reader.
Right.
You know, a slot, that's more wiring and more complexity to the board to be able to accept that.
Right. Their design philosophy was people are going to use the net to store everything and to load everything. So rather than spend the money on the SD card reader and redesign the case and everything else, instead, we'll spend that money on the processor or on the video card or whatever, and save.
Do you have a computer?
And then you know, save whatever that is for that.
Yep.
And I understand your frustration about that, but I really, you know, aside from loading apps, I'm pulling everything off the web.
Yeah.
I just don't load things onto it.
And a lot of it is. The scale. Yeah, the memory card is $8. The card reader is probably, what, $6?
Yeah.
But then they're going to build a million of them, so that's, you know, $10 million a quarter extra they'd have to spend.
Right, and
it would raise the price right. of the unit a little bit.
Right, that few extra bucks for the reader, the few extra bucks for redesigning the board, the few extra bucks for redesigning the case.
Yep.
They would rather spend that on the other components,
the
and
next
that makes
version.
Sense to me.
So
and,
once right. they've monetized the $200 version as is, you know, they'll come out with a new version in a year that has all this extra stuff and is still $200, and the old one will drop in price. That's
exactly.
what Apple did with the iPad. The
exactly.
iPad 3 with the Retina screen and the quad-core processor, they dropped the iPad 2 $100 bucks in price.
That's exactly
and
right.
Now what are they going to do in the iPad 4? So it's leapfrogging each other.
Right.
We're seeing who does what and then adding it to the next version.
And Smiley B says, techsupportalert.com/free-audio-books, bookshouldbefree.com. And Jack says, that where I'm in the IRC chat now. Jack says, 8 gigabytes, my first laptop, they wanted $650 for an 8 megabyte upgrade.
Yep. Yeah. 8 gig?
My first Mac Plus, I paid $1,200 for a 4 meg upgrade.
Yep.
4 1-meg cards at 300 apiece.
And you're getting yep. 1 gig of memory.
Yep. Which I've never used.
The processor.
The processor is ridiculously fast. The graphics Clinton? Processor is phenomenal. I would rather they spend the money on that, frankly. And their design philosophy, again, is that you're going to leave everything in the web anyway.
Yeah, and the thing of it is, it's well, you just showed us a game on there.
Yeah.
And that thing was moving along very well.
Ridiculously smooth.
And clarity.
Fast.
The
yeah.
clarity. That's
yeah.
the other thing. You know, you're not, like the old adage says, you're not going to please all the people all the time. And in this case, yes, yeah. Well, then if, yes, it's 50 gig, you know, $50 for another 8 gig. But you got just like you caused me to sit back and think, really, do I need that much space?
Right.
You know, do I have to carry the world on that? No.
Because
you can download.
You've got
yeah.
the world at the other end of the Wi-Fi.
Yeah. So you know, I mean,
well, we're going to change the way we feel about these things when they can, you know, when they can make phones small enough. Do I really need 64 gigabytes of storage on my phone? Yeah. No.
No.
I don't.
But by then, the price and the size of 64 gigs will be small.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Well, you know, when they can embed
we'll be complaining
that chip
about
in your head.
$50 for a terabyte? Yeah.
Right. Right.
But again, you know, it's, you know, folks are quick to say, well, you could have done that. Stop and think of what you're actually going to put on it. And you might be surprised, like you caused me to do. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, like you, if, you know, I put 2 gigabytes. 2 gigabyte, folks. That is a heck of a lot of space.
Yeah, it really.
If you're going to be away from Wi-Fi for extended periods of time, and you like to watch movies,
it's not enough.
It's not enough. You may want the more. Right.
I agree with you. But if you're going to be away from Wi-Fi and you read books, you can download 1,000 books into a gig.
Yeah.
Yep. If you want pictures, you download pictures of the right size. It takes.
Yep.
A little bit of planning, but now you save oodles of space by resizing your pictures to fit the device you've got and save yourself some room.
And again,
absolutely.
You don't have to carry every darn picture. You know, you pick and choose.
Right.
The ones you want. You know, do you really need 18 shots of your dog?
Yes.
Yes. No, but I need 200 shots of my daughter. But even so, most of those I load off Picasa anyway.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't need them on the phone because most of the time, 90% of my day, I've been paying attention to this. 90% of my day, I'm either somewhere where I absolutely have Wi-Fi, or I'm driving and I shouldn't be screwing around with the tablet anyway.
Exactly. Yep. And like you said, there are so many places you can go now and get free Wi-Fi.
And even your photos on the web. There's my Flickr feed. I have a picture of my son with Carrie Byron, who was at the LDRS Rocket Show.
It was your son with her.
My son with her. Someone had to take the picture.
Like, he can,
actually, that was Carol's picture. My my picture was from the side.
Yeah.
But surprising how short she is in real life.
She's a short
and man. Then Grant Imahara was on the season finale of Eureka.
Yes, he was.
Watched the marathon of those last night.
Yeah.
So the MythBusters are getting a little more publicity than they probably expected when they signed on as a model maker or a robot engineer.
Right.
But yeah, all your pictures now are on the internet. You don't need to store them on your device.
Archandra has asked if the Jelly Bean, which is the operating system version of Android that's on this thing, is it rooted yet? Yes, it is. Is mine rooted? No, I don't need it rooted.
I thought the one you have is ice cream.
It's ice cream sandwich. You're right.
3-2 was Jelly Bean.
No. J comes after I. I have Jelly Bean. I have the latest system.
4-1,
so it's Jelly
right?
Bean. Yeah, 4-1. Huh? Jelly Bean is the latest.
Oh, Jelly Bean?
Yeah.
Ice cream was?
The one before.
4-0.
4-0.
Okay. This is, yeah.
I lose track.
It's alphabetical.
Yeah.
J comes after I. H I J K.
Yeah.
So it's K. Okay.
So I didn't know that. I don't know. Some sort of. It's all
desserts.
So,
right?
I thought they were just dreaming up names, you know, and didn't know there was a particular.
Yeah.
So what's a dessert that starts with a K?
I don't know. Let's
quick, I'm looking. See if they'll get it faster.
Jelly Bean has been rooted. I did not root mine. I don't particularly care to root it. I don't need it rooted. It does everything I need to do as it is. How big is my music collection, or how big is the music that I listen to now? So I've got albums I haven't listened to in 35 years.
And with Google Music and iTunes Music and Amazon Music, you don't need your music on your device.
I do know I have 340 days worth of listening on Google.
See, here's
Google Music. I'm pretty sure I'm in good shape up there.
See, I can get the app for Sirius. Which I have Sirius Radio.
Sirius Radio, exactly.
And I can tap into, because I got the internet app, I can sit there and
plus
tap into.
Plus, I've got Pandora, I've got Slacker Radio, I've got 100 different other radio apps. Trust me, I don't even need to have a music collection anymore. The last album that I bought was If Pigs Could Fly, which was a great album. If you get a chance to find it, find it. It's got things like Annie DeFranco and Jackie Chan singing together. We're going to take a... It's a great album. We're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and we are Soundbites right here on the truly great member-supported Jazz 90.1. Listen for a minute now. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Did I just hear that our illustrious leader is actually going to work on a Saturday?
Unbelievable, isn't it?
No, he's not. It's pre-recorded.
Yeah, exactly. Apple's profit and sales fell short of analyst projections for only the second time since 2003, as customers held off on iPhone purchases while waiting for a new model to be introduced later in the year. Net income actually climbed 21%. To $8.82 billion, or $9.32 a share, for the quarter, Apple said. Sales rose 23% to $35 billion, but analysts had predicted a higher profit, and so shares fell 6% in late trading.
It's a record quarter. Revenues are up over 20%, and the analysts are mad.
Yeah, it's stupid. It's stupid. While Apple outgrew its closest technology industry peers, the company's sales climbed at the slowest pace since mid-2009. As Chief Executive Officer Tim Cook prepares to overhaul the iPhone, the 26% drop in purchases from the second quarter shows how anticipation for the latest model can drag growth in the near term. The iPhone is Apple's biggest seller. Apple, the world's largest company by market value, fell to as low as $565 in extended trading. Man, they're now buy now. The shares had slipped less than 1% at the close in New York, trimming the year-to-date gain to 48%. Apple is predicting further declines in sales and profit for the current period from last quarter. The company said sales would fall to about $34 billion. Profit would fall to about $7.65 a share. That compares to with predictions by analysts pretty closely. Speculation that Apple is preparing a new iPhone has caused some pause in sales, Apple Chief Financial Officer Peter Oppenheimer said. Last quarter was the first full period of sales for Apple's latest iPad, which was released in March and has a high-definition screen, stronger processor, and works with faster next-generation wireless networks from carriers such as Verizon and AT&T. Apple sold 17 million iPads compared with the 15.4 million projected. Sales were particularly strong in education, with one school district in Texas alone buying 11,000 iPads for students and teachers. But the company has not been immune to the weak economy. Cook said sales were especially weak in Europe, where countries are grappling with high unemployment and a debt crisis. Sales in the Asia-Pacific region, which includes China, slipped 22% from the previous quarter to $7.89 billion. So are you holding off on buying an iPhone until you see the next one? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. In just 1 minute, we are going to have Story Hour with Uncle Dave. But before that, we were talking about this before, how, first, where does Apple put any new products? Because there isn't a lot of stretch. And secondly, this has happened to Apple before. When they announce a new product, old products go begging for a while, but it's never been quite this evident.
We saw something similar last year at this time. For the first, I think it was the first four iPhones were released in June at the developer conference. Last year, for the iPhone 4S, they didn't announce it, and it came out in October, just before Christmas. Right. So a lot of people that were holding off buying an iPhone to see what came out in June were a little annoyed. But from what I remember reading from the Mac pundits at the time, at least, the average people don't know there's something new coming. They know their contract is up. They walk into the store. They buy whatever the new phone is. It's the technical elite that know something's new is coming, and we may wait for it.
Right.
But yeah, there's very little in the product line for something new.
Yeah, we can talk about that after this. But right now, kiddies, it's time to grab your footy chamois, put a mug of hot cocoa in your fist, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap him awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
I almost thought you forgot about me coming up close to the end, but you know what? Okay,
we'll,
Billy boy.
End on a bang.
People always amaze me. They come into the shop and we do a cleanup on the machine and they go, "Well, this other place was offering for $40 to analyze my machine and do, check me for viruses."
Okay, give me $40. I've analyzed your machine. You are infected with viruses.
Yes. And they'll say, "No, they'll do it for $40. Yes, they will take a look at your machine and tell you for $40 your machine. They're not going to clean it for you. Hello? Some of these viruses, root kits, and everything else take time.
No application refused.
More importantly,
we'll
many of
anything.
These are a fake.
Yeah.
A friend of mine got caught that way. She called me up and she said, "I don't know what to do. My computer is completely under someone else's control. I got a message that said I had a virus. Click here to fix it." They said, "Give us your credit card number." There's a problem. "And for $40, we'll fix it." I said, "The first thing you do is you call your bank and tell them your credit card's been stolen. The second thing you do is shut down your machine and bring it to me." It took me hours to fix this thing because they had put in root kits, they had put in keystroke loggers, they had put in all kinds of things in addition to getting her credit card number.
Well, the other thing, though, is all right, these folks get infected, and then they bring it to, like, Steve or I, and they expect us to clean it for $40. Yeah, hello? No, it doesn't happen. And they go, well, all these places have specials. They'll sit there saying, bring it to us and we'll clean your computer for $40. No, they'll do a diagnostic and tell you, you know.
Read the thing.
Yeah, you're not getting, you know, you're not going to get it for $40. Not if it gets intense. They might go in and, you know, for the $40, they might go in and update the programs. Yeah, they might just do the updates,
they
clean
run
out
Windows
your template. And they update, you know, say the super anti-spyware, the malware, and make sure your antivirus is updated and clean out the temp files. That's $40. Now, if you want the junk actually cleaned out, that takes more time.
Right. I would happily run the Security Tango on 100 machines a day for $40 a piece. But if there comes something more,
and which 90% of the time they are,
like it's a rootkit or whatever, that's going to take more time because I got to pull the drive out. I got to put it in another machine. I got to do all of that stuff.
Yeah, but you get people, they're porked off because, you know, you spent 3 hours and you're only charging them for an hour.
Right.
Or an hour and a half. Hello, they're still getting, you know.
Yeah, we
I get it.
I understand, you know, it's tight times and everything else, folks, but you know what? If you're going, I got to sit there and spend, you know, a minimum 3 to 5 hours cleaning up. Oh, and they not only have one identity, but they have three or four, and each one has to be done one at a time.
Yep.
There is no generic. Oh, just, you know, clean all this off.
We've talked to other repair shops around the country, and a lot of them are running in the same situation. You know, it took us 4 hours to do this, but we felt bad, so we only charged you two.
Yeah.
A lot of the companies are now starting to put that on their reports. It took us 5 hours to run all this, but you're a good customer of ours, so we'll give you a discount. But it really did take us 5 hours.
Yeah.
And that's what people don't often understand. Well, you just ran a program, didn't you? No, we ran a dozen programs on your four identities, and it took a long time.
And a lot of these, I have to pull the hard drives out of the machine, put them on another machine, which on laptops, you know, you got to break it down, or even the machine. Sometimes you got to get in there and get the hard drive out, put it on there, put it back in, boot it up, and then continue on.
There's a myth about computers that I don't understand. I know that I can't fix my car. So when I take it to a mechanic and he tells me it's $70 an hour, I may wince, but I get it. It's going to cost me $70 an hour to get my car fixed. If you don't know how to fix your computer, you bring it to somebody, it might cost you money to get it fixed. There's no magic.
Right. And, you know, folks, though, just have trouble with it. Well, you know, I could have done it probably for cheaper. Well, then if you could have, why didn't you?
That's exactly right.
And I just sit there and tell them, and you could have pulled the hard drive out? Well, why would I have to do that?
Right.
Because it was a rootkit. People aren't understanding rootkits. Rootkits literally boot upon the initial turning on the computer.
Right.
And there are some programs that will get rid of some rootkits, but it's the old game of leapfrog. We get one and find a way to remove it. They find another one.
Right. Archander was reminding me, I have a quote that I put out the other day that essentially says, and I forget who the person was, but essentially says, you don't get paid for the hour. You get paid for the value you bring to the hour.
Right. It's the what's up here. You know, my head of over close to 30 years of computer knowledge. I mean, I've been doing this, like you guys, since the late 70s. I think it was first one I got my hands on was 1978. It was an old trash 80.
Yep.
And started playing with those. So, and I learned over time. So, yes, you're not paying for the time. You're paying for our experience. And just like folks, when they call into the show, they're tapping into our knowledge between the three of us, probably close to 100 years, pretty close to 100 years of computer knowledge.
There are days I feel that way just by myself.
Yeah. But you know what? That's exactly. You know, and I think they lose track of that.
Yeah. People, well, and I understand that. Computers seem to be fairly simple if you don't think about it, because we just pick them up and use them, and they're making them simpler and simpler to use.
And oftentimes that makes them more expensive to fix. You look inside a computer now, and there's a motherboard, and everything's on the motherboard.
Yep.
So if almost anything goes wrong, you got to replace the motherboard. And then there's a hard drive, and then you know maybe a video card, but most of those are on the motherboard now.
Yep.
And then maybe a power supply. So you've got maybe four parts inside a computer.
Yeah.
And if anything goes wrong, it's one of those four expensive parts.
Yeah, we may make it look easy, but you know what? I wouldn't go sit there and do a, you know, and remove my appendix because the doctor makes it look easy.
That's right.
And if you want to go to your cousin, you know, your cousin friend's, you know, roommate who works out of the basement of the house for $10 an hour, sure.
Whatever works for you.
I had my car fixed once, and we paid them in beer, and we'll never do that again.
That's exactly right.
Actually, no, don't pay them first. That's the first question.
I had a friend say, "Oh, let me do your shocks for you," and the next thing I knew, there was a hole burned through my trunk. So yeah. All right. Listen, that's it for another show. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everybody who we didn't. Oh, we got to everybody. So, but next week, call in early and often. And we will see you next week. For Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. It is 55 minutes after the hour. You've just spent 2 hours of your life listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.